DJMCloud.com.
Okay, you are an alcoholic. You need pizza.
Episode LXXX.
You're gonna lose a tooth! You'll lose a fucking tooth!
Lie one could tell other than a lie to take a country to war, to make up things, to take people to war. That's just got to be the most obscene, immoral thing to do. So this government hasn't earned the right to be trusted. If it says Assad has chemical weapons, or if it says Ahmadinejad has a nuclear weapon.
But it's not this government. Is it that went to war with Saddam? You have to differentiate.
Which government? You're talking about Obama versus Bush?
Yes.
No, I'm talking about the real government. Wall Street, the banks, the corporations, the people that made $2 trillion is what we spent on the Iraq war. Who made that money? Soldiers in the field? I don't think so. No, this is always about the people who have the purse strings, and the politicians who are bought off by them. And so if they come on now and tell me anything about this, you know, Ahmadinejad is building a bomb. Really? Well, I'll believe it, you know, when he walks in the room here with it and shows it to me. Frankly, I mean, that's just how much I would not trust anything being said by the military-industrial complex of this great country.
Well, today is April 7th, 2013, and this is the DJMCloud.com podcast with me, Dan McKeown. Well, the Michael Moore clip speaks for itself. I mean, I think he's right. I think you can't trust anything being said by what he calls the real government. I have a new artwork. It was actually used as a show artwork a few episodes ago, but the iTunes requirements have been updated, and they require a 1400 by 1400 image for the podcast image, you know, because some image appears when you search podcasts in iTunes. If you use that to find podcasts, then you're going to see the artwork, and then a lot of podcatchers use it too. And I know that artwork, you know, I mean, it shows up different ways in different contexts, but there's a good chance that that show artwork is going to have an effect getting people's attention, you know, catching people's eyes or getting an impression of the podcast. And, you know, I've used different artwork. Like, the last one that I had was also from, previous show's artwork. It was based on a 1999 photo I took in Stonehenge. Now, I still have the negatives, but I have just a print from that photo that I took a picture of with my iPhone, and then ran through some filters and stuff on Photoshop and published it. And the you know, the picture looks really cool. You know, like Stonehenge is a very, very fascinating place, and you know, I was actually discussing Stonehenge recently, and in the conversation I was having, I thought about the things I'd learned about it. You know, it's actually not connected in any way to Celtic or origins. Now, the Britannish, kind of known now as the Welsh or Cornish, lived in that area in the southwest England. It's a very, very cool area. It's an area that's near Glastonbury. Now, I've been to Bath, and I've been to Stonehenge, and so that's out in that area. Was the one time I was outside of London for a day and went around those areas. But that is a very cool part of England. I think it's connected with a lot of crop circles and other stuff too. It has a very very mystical kind of culture. Now, of course, it attracts that kind of person. Of course, certainly when I was there in Stonehenge, there was a field of sheep on the other side. Just, you know, plain normal English countryside kind of things there. But there's stuff like the Glastonbury Festival and people that come to look for crop circles and other stuff like that in that part of the English countryside out there. I think like Bath, I mean, that was, it's quite an impressive Roman era Bath, and then an old town square, and I'm sure more to it than that too. But you know, I was on a tour bus that day, and you know, I just saw that area that in the middle of town where we stopped, and I would say saw the Roman ruins, but I mean it's very intact. I guess it was never used for quarrying like so many impressive Roman structures that have been laid low over the years. Of course, there are still plenty of ancient structures intact, like partly intact, like the Colosseum, or stuff that doesn't seem like it's missing much, like the Pantheon of Rome. But the Bath itself, I think it had sort of a greenish water. You know, I don't think anyone would actually really want to bathe in there, but it was a very impressive use of the local springs for the cleanest, warmest water, or you know, something like that. It was, you know, Roman engineering, especially with aqueducts and other types of water routing, you know, sewage. The engineering that the Romans had was incredibly advanced for their time in that kind of area, especially. I'm not sure if they, you know, if I think it's just a famous example of uses of arches where they would have long aqueducts that still stand, I think, in areas like parts of southern France. It really is impressive when you look at the scope of those, but Stonehenge, the actual Stonehenge site is sometimes referred to as megalithic. It comes from thousands of years ago, apparently. I mean, it just dates to a very long time ago. So it isn't part of the Celtic history in terms of who built it, because it really... the dates of that are thought to have been when the Stonehenge was built simply predates the timeline for the arrival of the Celtic peoples, who, as far as I know, were much further east, maybe on the Russian steppe at the time that these were constructed, the structures at Stonehenge. And it's a very cool site, so definitely it's worth seeing if you're able to get to England, or maybe you actually are there already. It's definitely a cool thing to check out. Gmail is now using the new Compose window design as a default. Now, I really don't consider myself much of a fan of this, because when I use Gmail in Chrome, and I hit the link for Compose, it pushes this small window in the bottom right. With all the trends toward full screen design, partly influenced by mobile, it seems like a strange step backward to push that focus of attention back to the bottom right. And then you can maximize it, but the way that I've done it is only made it like a separate, slightly larger window, which I guess is okay, but it's not my normal workflow when I'm often using tabs. So I don't know what to make of it. I guess I don't really think I'm a very big fan of it, because it changes the interface in a way that isn't helpful. Now, to their credit, Gmail is people have been saying, it's almost 10 years old, and I'm not sure anyone has really beat it yet. I mean, in terms of going, at least above the level of Gmail, to the extent that it's going to get a lot of people to switch to it or something. Now, there's stuff out there like that Mailbox app that Dropbox bought and stuff. A lot of mail clients sync with Gmail, as with other popular services, in a lot of cases Yahoo and Hotmail and stuff. But I think Gmail has that combination of being able to use other addresses, being able to use IMAP or POP3. I think it allows a lot of different ways to configure email effectively. And so really, in almost 10 years, it hasn't been, I don't know if it's really been improved on that much. So, they're still the leader out there, but there's other ways to access your Gmail account other than through the default web interface, but that's always been the main way to use it, I would think. So, well, for a lot of people, for me, and I'm just not a big fan of the new Compose window. But I guess, they're always going to change the design. That's the nature of the web app. Instead of an app you install yourself, you can decide when to upgrade, although with security upgrades, you tend to upgrade regardless. But, and not being able to control when upgrades are pushed through or made default is one of the drawbacks of hosted web apps, cloud apps, all that stuff. And Google is pushing more stuff like Google Keep, which is supposed to be a kind of Evernote competitor, but I'm just a pretty loyal Evernote user right now, I think, so I'm not really going to... I just don't see myself switching to the Google one, but I mean, they're solid as it's integrated into your Google account, it's included in Google Drive. I think that when you look at something like Google, I think that of course their main income is from advertising, But Android seems to be where they get a lot of their identity from, and stuff like Google Glass is important to them, but I'm not really sure where they're going with their corporate vision overall. The small part of the company that does the visionary stuff, or the advertising. There's some new files in the DJMCloud.com podcast soundboard. There's a link to that in the show notes. You can find show notes with some links to stuff I'm talking about. That's at DJMCloud.com. And then just search for podcast LXXX. So it's podcast 80, and I'm moving the numbers up to correlate with how many podcasts there really are, because there was a podcast that was numbered 0 and one that was numbered 10.1, and that was just a quirk of the naming. And since it's really the 80th podcast, I readjusted the number system for this one. So now Amazon is buying the book social network Goodreads.com. It's a site where members go on and review, rate, recommend books. Now, I have an account there, and so, I rated some books, and I'm not sure if it automatically feeds in, but there's some aggregation, some page that they list as best books ever. It's basically based on the ratings of their members. Okay, the books. Number one, The Hunger Games. Number two, Twilight. Number one, the first Twilight book. I mean,
no way.
It gets worse. The number three, Harry Potter. Number five. I think Harry Potter. I remember when Jessica had a copy of one of the Harry Potter books that a friend had loaned to her. People were really into it, and they would give it to friends after they read it or whatever. So I picked it up and read about a half of it in, like an hour or two. I kind of read it fast, but maybe half read it. It was fucking awful. I couldn't believe how wooden the storytelling was, how just pointless. I don't know if unpredictable is the right word about the characters, just stupid, pointless. I was not a fan.
No way.
And that's the only reason. I don't know, remember which one it was. It wasn't the first one. It was one of those in that series, and I think they all have the same fucking plot, right? He goes from some stupid place in England to some stupid wizard school in England, and it's just like droll, dry, just flavorless garbage. Okay, so fourth on the list on Goodreads is Harry Potter and the fourth book. Fifth is Harry Potter number 3. Six is Harry Potter number 6. I can't believe it.
You're gonna lose a tooth. You're gonna lose a fucking tooth.
It's just crazy. So, I mean, what do we have after that? Number 7, To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. Number 8, another Harry Potter book. Number 2. Number 9, Gone with the Fucking Wind. Really? And then, you know, number 10, another Harry Potter book. Number 11, Twilight number 4. Number 12, Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. Okay. Number 13, Eclipse, Twilight number 3. Number 14, The Giving Tree by Shel Silverstein. I remember in grade school that there was a teacher that really liked Shel Silverstein, and she would read his books to us, and I just remember thinking they were just bilge. The Chronicles of Narnia is number 15. You know,
it's a joke. It's a fucking joke.
There's a fucking book by C.S. Lewis before any book by J.R.R. Tolkien. That's just incredible. All right, number 16, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, number 1. Number 17, Animal Farm by George Orwell. Now, I don't think that one's very good. How could you put Animal Farm ahead of 1984? Maybe that's because the typical user of the site is actually red. Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte. It's a good book. Okay, now, number 19, New Moon, Twilight number 2. Number 20, Memories of a Geisha. Number 21, Catching Fire, The Hunger Games number 2. Number 22 is just some collection of Harry Potter's number 1 through 7. Number 23, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. Number 24, The Time Traveler's Wife. Number 25, The Da Vinci Code. So let's review. The top 25. Nothing by Nathaniel Hawthorne, Ernest Hemingway, James Joyce, Henry Miller, Hunter S. Thompson. Nothing by any. Unbelievable. No, Stephen Crane, no modern, no Kafka or Camus, nobody, none of them a novel in the top 25 on Goodreads. So that's what Amazon's buying. They're buying that audience. So, I mean, I guess that might represent the popular audience. But I think that there's a phenomenon that goes on with books in social connections is fairly pernicious, that people don't read very widely because they want to read stuff they can talk about their book club. It's a lowest common denominator kind of thing. I mean, you know, that explains the prevalence of Jane Austen. So, you know, when you see people reading Jane Austen in their book club, like, that's fine. But I mean, there's a lot of other authors, and there's a lot of indie authors out there too. Nothing that's in any way kind of indie would fit into that. And, you know, that was a, That's a terrible list. So another thing people complain about, though, with Goodreads, I think the main thing about the acquisition is that Amazon is going to control the pipeline and the, well, you know, like the book buying links that they, for now, there's this drop down. You can pick from Kobo or Barnes & Noble or Amazon or other booksellers. Now, people are assuming that eventually it'll become a front for Amazon. Of course, Amazon has operated companies from the background and let them be run maybe more the way that they used to than some people might have expected from observing a lot of corporate acquisitions, because people aren't really, like, you know, used to a company not eventually being folded into the mainstream of the acquiring company. And there's the acquire or whatever phenomenon now, where people are just buying companies for just buying companies for the people so that they can add them to whatever projects they have going on, not even, like, you know, maintaining the site that they have. So stuff like Posterous. So I'm actually working on getting my Posterous site moved over. I still have to get a handful more photos, so I hope they don't switch it off on me before I get that done. So I moved djmblog.com to redirect to the archive site, which is a incomplete but pretty good archive of the Posterous blog, because, like, the first half of the Posterous blog that I used, like, I started in, like, 2010, was, like, the first like, year of it or so, I used it as the podcast blog, and then I moved the podcast to djmcloud.com, but what I used Posterous for mainly then was archiving Instagram photos. So it has a lot of photos that I can download, because I push them to Posterous, and so they're on Posterous's S3 account on Amazon, which I assume will be turned off when they turn off the hosting for the site. So I have to go and get all that stuff, or as much as I can, and you know, I've gotten a good chunk of it already, but that's something that happens where, so you know, the site Goodreads will be maintained, but I'm not sure the people behind it will be able to continue working on, you know, moving the site forward, and especially moving it forward as an independent company, because I think at one time they had relied on Amazon's API, and then they had built their own kind of database of books and stuff like that because they wanted to be independent, and now they've been bought by Amazon. But of course, you know, Amazon has a lot of cash to buy companies with, so they may have made out well, you know, from a financial standpoint when they got bought. It's a new Twitter account that has been talked about. I don't know, maybe you've heard about this. It's called Florida Man, the real life stories of the world's worst superhero. It's just a Twitter account that there's a link to in the show notes, djmcloud.com. What they're talking about is just headlines that involve, you know, guy from Florida doing insane shit. So some of the stories right there on the account: Florida man accused of trying to strangle wife in porta potty. Florida man flees hotel after trying to kill himself with hibachi grill. I mean, you know, you're going to find some stuff. They retweet an account called Florida Woman, too. Florida man lives life as a mermaid. Florida man shot in foot after threatening brother with machete frying pan. Now, there's a book out there based on the series The Bible. Now, I haven't watched this, but apparently there's a series by some reality TV huckster that claims to tell the narrative of the Bible. So, of course, they have to have a book, a novelization. So there is one. It is actually a book called, quote, A Story of God and All of Us, a novel based on the epic TV miniseries The Bible, unquote.
There is actually a book with that title.
It's a joke. It's a fucking joke. So these people, you know what I mean?
Okay, well, there's another story in the religious fanaticism area. Mark Kirk, the Republican senator from Illinois, had a stroke. And it's reported that Mark Kirk, quote, suffered a massive stroke last year and later told the press that three angels had appeared at his hospital bedside to ask if he was ready to join them in heaven, unquote. So I'm not sure if one side of him is already in heaven or what. I wonder if what Mark Kirk saw were actually like demons or, you know, evil spirits that were, you know, just, you know, messing with him. Or maybe he's insane, but either way, he's in the United States Senate. Still. So there's this episode of King of the Hill that I saw recently, and it was about Hank Hill joining a food co-op. And, you know, it's called Raise the Stakes. There's a link to it on Netflix in the show notes. It's actually a pretty funny episode. But, you know, it's like, it's it talks about the rules of the co-op, where you're supposed to volunteer there, and they're supposed to sell, you know, at cost. And Hank Hill is, you know, mainly in it to get good steaks and tomatoes. But, you know, I've seen similar types of operations in California. But the main product that these co-ops sell is marijuana. Or cannabis, if you prefer that term. Some people in the legalization movement prefer that term. You know, there's a headline that for the first time, a majority of Americans favor legalization of marijuana. And it's already been voted in Washington, Colorado. So I think it's just a matter of time before it, you know, goes to other places, which is a good idea, total legalization. This has been the DJMCloud.com podcast with me, Dan McKeown. Send us feedback at podcast@pacificpelican.us.